Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Elliot Friedman here, and we are doing something a little bit different. Jeff Merrick took the week off, so I'm not going to say what hotel we're in because that is against the rules, but we're in my hotel in Vegas. We've got Hugo Regenbeau. He's the cameraman. He's recording this into his camera. We've got Eddie Hall, who's the executive producer of remote broadcasting. All of the broadcasts that we have, the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast, the Canucks broadcast, the Flames broadcast, the Oilers broadcast, and half the Leaf broadcasts, Eddie is in charge of them. So if you have any complaints, email or tweet at Eddie Hall. And our guest host today alongside me is a longtime friend and somebody that now we're on the same team, but we used to be on the opposite teams a lot when you used to work for an inferior telecom company, David Amber. David, thank you very much for pinch hitting today for Jeff. Now, the scouting report on David is a pinch hitter. He's got more power than Jeff. He's faster than Jeff, but he's a liability in the field compared to Jeff.
I'm definitely a liability. Listen, who thought this would lead? You know, we met 20-something years ago. Who thought it would lead to this? If there ever was a podcast that deserved a video element, it's right now in your hotel room. You're tucked away in your pajamas, comfy, sitting in bed. And here we are at the Stanley Cup Final in Las Vegas, exactly how we thought this would play out.
You know, there's nothing more comfortable than a pair of teddy bear pajamas, so that's why I always take them with me. So David's right. Like, before we get into the podcast, and we'll talk about the Stanley Cup, and one of the things we're going to talk about is Alexander Ovechkin, because there's nobody bigger on the Alexander Ovechkin bandwagon than David Amber, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But that's right, 20 years ago I was at the Score.
Yeah,
you were at TSN. Take us through your career a little bit, because you've had quite the ride in a lot of different places.
Well, it's funny because we were kind of rival reporters. You were the beat reporter in Toronto for the Score, and I was doing the same for TSN and a little bit of anchoring with them. And we would see each other out in spring training and all the Stanley Cup Finals and World Series, and we would sort of be like trying to get the scoops on each other. It was quite a scene, and now here we are. I'm trying to think back to the first time we met. I don't remember the specific.
I actually remember the first time we met. I was working at the Score, and I went out to Calgary to cover a Flames game or something like that. And you were there. You worked locally in Calgary. You went from Sault Ste. Marie to Calgary, right?
My first TV job was Sault Ste. Marie. Yeah. It was Joe Thornton's draft year. They had a heck of a team. Joe Thornton, man, I'd love to see that guy raise a cup one year, because he's one of the most likable guys you'll ever meet. And he was just incredible for the Greyhounds, and they had a nice little run in the playoffs where they got knocked off by Manny Malhotra and the Guelph Storm in the postseason. And after 9 months in Sault Ste. Marie, I got this great call from Keith Pelley saying, would you like to come to TSN? And I was like, yes, I would. And I went out to Calgary. I was the reporter out there for about 9-10 months, and then I got brought into Toronto. I was in Toronto for 5 years, where you and I crossed paths a lot repeatedly, and had some, you know, our beginning of our friendship began there. Then I was down at ESPN from 2002 to 2010.
And you got that job. The story I've heard is you were at spring training while that one was getting negotiated, right? Because Dean Willers, your camera guy, told me that you would be in the car talking to your agent while you guys were working on stuff. Is that the way it was?
World Series. It was the World Series.
Oh, it was the
Series.
World Series. Yeah. Okay, I knew it was something baseball.
2002 World Series. What was that? Giants and
Angels.
Angels. Yeah, yeah, the Barry Bonds. They blew it in Game 7. I was down at ESPN for a number of years, and it was a lot of fun down there. I learned a lot and got to meet a lot of interesting people and worked on some very cool shows. But then I ended up coming back to Canada. My wife wanted to come back for her job, and we came back. And here we are, what now, 8 years, 9 years later, and finally we're on the same team, as you mentioned, which has been pretty cool.
You know, I want to ask you a little bit about ESPN, because I've had my buddies ask me. ESPN has never offered me a job, but I have been offered a job at other points in the United States. And they have asked me, like, did you ever feel that you needed to validate yourself by getting a job in the U.S.? And the reason I turned down the job that was offered to me at the time is that the guy who was going to hire me said, just so you know, I think that your current job is better than the one you're about to accept. And I was always believed, don't screw around with happy. If you're happy, don't go anywhere for an extra $5,000 or $10,000, because it's never worth it if you're happy. And I always said, no, I didn't feel that validation. For me, the most important thing was that I like my situation, and I almost always have. But did you ever feel that you needed that validation?
No, you know what it was? I thought it was a great opportunity. I didn't have kids yet, and I thought, wow, you know, ESPN, I've covered a lot of the big sporting events, the World Series, et cetera, where you see these guys and the level, the scope of the broadcast that they did. And I said, I kind of want to be part of that. And to get a chance to go down there and meet with some of the people and work alongside some of those people was fantastic. So it wasn't really about being validated. It was more just, this is a great opportunity and why not give it a shot? And I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's kind of funny. We ended up getting back to Canada, so maybe that's where I belonged all along. But at the same time, I have no regrets at all. It wasn't really about validation as much as it was just about going out there and sort of checking out a new path.
Out of everybody who doesn't live in Washington or isn't a Capitals fan, David Amber is the captain of the Ovechkin bandwagon. We will talk about that. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain. We are professional grade. So here we are at the Stanley Cup Final in my hotel room, and so I'm going to tell you a funny story about David Amber. So David is nobody I know in Canadian media is a bigger fan of Alexander Ovechkin than David Amber is. David is the guy, when he got hired, when he took over in his new role at HockeyNet a couple years ago, our first big thing together was the World Cup of Hockey. And he was saying to us that if Alexander, we always make these jokes with him, if Alexander Ovechkin does such and such a pace, he's going to break Wayne Gretzky's record for most goals. And we would always look at him and say, David, it's not going to happen. He's not going to do that.
That's actually not what you said. You said, David, you're an idiot.
Okay, well, I was trying to be polite. And, you know, it's a running joke with us. Whenever Ovechkin scores, or if he has a couple games where he doesn't score, we're like, okay, David, what's the projection? How close is he at? And the best part about this was I did a sit-down with Ovechkin during the World Cup, and I'm like, I got to ask him about this. And Ovechkin was a bit distracted during that one. He's normally a very good interview, but it was after practice, and the team bus was getting ready to leave. I could see that just timing wasn't ideal. But I asked him, do you think you can break Gretzky's record for goal? And he looked at me like I was nuts. And he goes, it was the most animated answer. He goes, there's not a chance I can do it, but you are the biggest Ovechkin believer.
Listen, earlier this year, and I'm not alone in this, and this is what I said about it. Let's be clear, because you're kind of...
I'm warping it for a good story? Okay.
All I said was, if Alexander Ovechkin wants to break Gretzky's record, he can do it. And this is what I meant. If he wanted to play it out like Jaromir Jagr, certainly Ted Leonsis will let him play it out as long as he wants, I think. I think he's earned that right. And he's incredibly healthy. We've seen Alexander Ovechkin never gets injured. He's missed more games due to suspension than to injury throughout his career. If he went on a pace where he's going from the 50-goal seasons to 40-goal seasons to 30-goal seasons, but he did this for another, essentially, 12 years, he could break Wayne Gretzky's record. You know, John Buchagross over at ESPN actually had an article earlier this year with the math and sort of saying it's there to be taken if that's what he chose to do. If he wins the Cup this year, maybe that's not his goal anyway, but if he wins the Cup this year, that might change everything because he's, you know, reached the highest pinnacle of what he could reach in his career. But my contention is that if he wanted to play it out, and even though it would be, you know, diminishing returns as far as the goal scoring, he could play to 43, 44, and be the all-time goal scoring leader. And I'm going to stand by that.
Okay, so we're sitting here. We're waiting for Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final. Capitals up 3-1. If you had a Conn Smythe vote, who would get your vote right now?
Right now, I would give it to Alexander Ovechkin, and not based on anything you just talked about, but based on... To be honest with you, it's not as much about what he's done in the Stanley Cup Final as much as the fact that he led them to the Stanley Cup Final. You have to remember Game 6, they're facing elimination against Tampa Bay. Who was the best player? Who set the tone from the very first shift? Alexander Ovechkin. Game 7,
a great goal.
Sensational. I mean, he was the best player on the ice in the two games where they faced elimination. He's been steady. He's been good. He's been a leader. He's been everything you'd want, and his career sort of dictates that this guy, this is sort of the crowning jewel on what's been an incredible career for him.
I tend to agree with you. I have a vote, and I am leaning towards, like, my ballot right now is Ovechkin 1, Kuznetsov 2, and Holtby 3. And I've been kind of thinking about it as you and I were sitting at the tables last night, and we'll discuss some of this. I was thinking about what it would take for Kuznetsov to pass Ovechkin. So he's here at 31 points.
Yeah.
This century, the 21st century, only Malkin with 36 in 2009 has more than Kuznetsov had in any one playoff year. Like, if he has another four-assist game and a clincher, does Kuznetsov become the guy you have to vote for?
It's so tough, and that's a really interesting dilemma. Listen, if he has a four-point game and Ovechkin, and granted, if he has a four-point game, Ovechkin's probably getting some points as well, but it's a hypothetical. Yeah, I mean, if he gets up to 35 points and he's finishing up with back-to-back four-point games and he came back from the injury, I mean, there's certainly a case to be made for Yevgeny Kuznetsov. I still think the straw that stirs the drink that is the Washington Capitals is clearly number eight. He's their captain, their leader, their emotional leader. You see him on the bench. We had all these incredible shots. Our crew picked up so many great shots of the emotion he's been feeling from the relief of beating Pittsburgh, looking up to the sky and saying finally, to what we've seen on the bench over the last...
Hold, be safe.
Yeah, like, it's been incredible. This guy is the emotional leader. I'm not sure Kuznetsov is that guy. I think he's been incredible on the ice, but I think Ovechkin is the guy.
We're going to talk about this more in the pregame for Game 5, and I'm going to write something about it in my next blog, but there was a point this year where the Capitals were playing very poorly, and they came home and they had a Minnesota game on a Saturday night, and I got a call that day and I said, just watch out if the Capitals lose this game. I think there's going to be changes coming, and usually that means the coach or something like that, or they're going to make a move. And they blew out Minnesota, and they've been on a roll for most of the time since then. And guys told me that Ovechkin was a big driver. Like, he kind of sensed, or either he knew or he sensed that something big was coming if they lost that game, and he drove that bus. And I got a lot of time for that. And I know that happened in the regular season, but I do think, to me, that's a factor in the voting. Like, you still have to get here. And there was a point in time that the Capitals, early in the year, you didn't know if they were going to get here. Also, the fact, David, he said, we're not going to suck this year. When people talked about the Capitals at the beginning of the season.
Give this context, Elliot. They won the President's Trophy in 2016-2017 only to be easily dismissed in the second round by Pittsburgh. Both those years, they had a much more talented on paper team. They had a team that looked like its Stanley Cup bonafide team. Shattenkirk, Marcus Johansson, Justin Williams. They had all these players they lost. And everyone said, well, they're going to be much inferior team. They might not be a playoff team this year. That was the expectation going into this season. There was such a mass drop-off losing all those players. And what have they gone? They've added this youthful exuberance, the Jacob Vranas, the Chandler Stephensons, and Ovi's held these guys up. And there's been a certain level of accountability, and I think that all starts with their head coach, Barry Trotz, who called a big, significant team meeting. They lost back-to-back blowout losses at Nashville, followed by Colorado. Called a meeting. He said, there's a stink in the air. There's a stink in this dressing room. Are we going to turn it around? Are we going to play, or are you guys just going to quit? And eventually the guy said, yeah, that was the turning point in the season. That was in late November, and then they ran off an incredible record, like 17-4-6 or something like that. And what do you know? They go out and win the division again. And Ovi, again, is that inspirational leader, the guy who's kind of holding guys accountable, and you have this head coach in Barry Trotz, who, you know, listen, he's fifth all-time in wins. The four guys in front of him are, it's the Mount Rushmore of head coaches in the National Hockey League Hall of Fame, essentially. He wants to join that group, and I think he challenged, he laid the gauntlet down, and the guys answered.
Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so we're going to do some Ask 31s later, but here's one that's a good one for what we're talking about now. Adam Preece, who does Ovechkin hand the cup to?
Well, I think it's Nick Backstrom. If I'm not mistaken, they're the two longest-serving members of the Capitals. Backstrom is a bona fide perennial all-star.
Yep.
Remember, he came back from a hand injury. We don't even talk about that anymore because he's been so good the last few days.
Yep.
But he missed, what, three games, I believe?
Four.
I mean, he's playing through pain.
When he played, you know, we kept showing it when it came in.
Yeah.
And it looked like the Frankenstein monster's hand. Like, it didn't look like a real hand.
I shook his hand before the start of the, and I was surprised he put it out there. Because
did you squeeze it extra hard?
I did not. But it was still quite puffy. that. So I think Nick Backstrom's the obvious guy. They've been through thick and thin together. They've sort of been at the front of the criticism, wouldn't you say, over the last, when there's been these playoff failures, there's been Ovechkin, Backstrom, Holtby's name that's come to light, and he deserves to get the cup second.
They don't have
a Ron Hainsey.
Yeah, Ron Hainsey or a Ray Bourque or something like that, that you're saying, we're going to give the Stanley Cup to that guy. So I agree with you. I would be surprised if it was anyone but Backstrom, unless, I just thought about it, unless he goes totally off the board and gives it to Ted Leonsis.
You're joking, right?
No, I was being serious. I'm sorry. It just popped into my head, unless he goes totally off the board.
Because he and Leonsis sucking up to your boss, right?
Well, he and Leonsis, they're really tight.
Ted Leonsis, and remember, Ted Leonsis bought the team the year after they went to the Stanley Cup final. He bought the team in 1999. He has suffered through some incredible hardships and heartache and heartbreaking losses, and he's been, by all accounts, an incredible owner. Having said that, I think this is for the players. These are the guys' blood, sweat, and tears. The owner will have his time with the Cup.
I agree with that. I was just throwing it out there. Okay, so as this series has gone on, remember we're taping this the day before game number 5, Washington has got exponentially better, and for the first time all year, the Golden Knights are coming up snake eyes. And I'm saying that because Dave and I played some craps last night. The Golden Knights are coming up snake eyes. We haven't seen Vegas look this discombobulated
all year, ever.
At all. Yeah.
In their expansion franchise
in expansion history.
I guess that's what's surprising. We came in and Vegas had all the momentum. They had all this time off. And then in game one, it was a sloppy game by both teams, but they still won that game. They still look like the faster team. And I guess what surprised me is that Washington has been able to impose its will. They've done all the things that Washington didn't do in the past. It's not about up and down the ice and fancy plays. It's about blocking shots, making hits, finishing checks, being in the right position. Very solid special teams. They've done everything right. And again, I think all the credit goes to Barry Trotz. And maybe that's what's standing out in my mind is like, wow, this Washington team, all those years we bet on them, and not literally, but, and they fell short. And the one year we all sort of said, Washington. I mean, a lot of people didn't think they were going to get out of the, they lost the first two games to Columbus.
You know, actually,
a lot of people didn't think they were going to get out of the first round.
That is the thing that is the most amazing thing to me is that, and a couple of Capital players have told me this. They go, you go back to game 3 against Columbus. They're down 2-0. They're on the road. They're in overtime.
Lars Eller.
Columbus hits the post. The puck goes in what off Lars Eller's back or butt or whatever it hit.
Yeah, skate.
I can't remember. If that Columbus shot goes in, it's 3-0 and they're done. You know, it just shows you the margin of victory and defeat.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's incredible.
Again, we're talking about it from a hockey standpoint, but the big picture, and I'm staring out your hotel window at the Las Vegas Strip. I mean, this is what I will remember in 5, 10, 15, 20 years. This is what the Stanley Cup Final is going to be remembered for.
Yeah.
The indelible mark is the NHL decided to expand to the desert. Oh, that's a horrible decision. They expand to give, they give Las Vegas a team. Horrible decision. It's going to be a failure. It's going to be a flop. No one's going to gravitate to the team. And we're walking through streams of 10,000 fans to get into the arena. I mean, it's insane.
It's fantastic.
It's worked. And, you know, Gary Bettman takes a lot of hits. This one is going to go down as one of the, congratulatory moments for the commissioner because he's hit a home run here, and it's succeeded better than anyone would have expected. And there's a beautiful storyline here, especially coming out of the worst gun massacre in the U.S. history on October 1st. And to have this city being able to rise up with the team has been an incredible storyline.
I think it's been a lot of fun, and I'm on record as saying I love the cheese. Like, I love the Vegas
intro.
I've
seen you at the buffet. You do love the cheese.
That's right. I love the cheese. I love the Golden Knights intros. I love the Michael Buffer. I'm not a big Imagine Dragons guy, and my kid loves them. But I just like the fact that they tried something different. You know, what they've got lined up for Game 5, it's going to be pretty cool from what I understand. You know, the Pat Sajak thing in Washington, it didn't work. You know what? I like the fact that they're trying. To me, Dave, the last two Stanley Cup finals, Nashville and Vegas, have been the Stanley Cup finals where I've had more people text me and say, if I get there, can you get me tickets? And what that says is people, even hockey fans, they want to be part of something that's an event. They want to be part of something cool. And I like the fact the NHL is trying to find these kinds of things. And they're doing them on the steps of the Smithsonian, which says, that's Washington. I love that kind of stuff. And like I think when you drop the puck, the game's the thing. But if you want to take half an hour before the drop of the puck and say, we're going to try some different stuff, like the Vegas Open, I'm all for it, and hit me with more of it. Like, if Toronto ever makes the Stanley Cup final, they got to find a way to put Drake sitting on the CN Tower, just like his last album cover. Like, that, I want that, and I think it's about time the league did more of it.
Yeah, and I think we've agreed about this for a long time. The players aren't promoted to the level they need to be promoted. I mean, the NBA, they got to take a page out of the NBA's book.
Yes.
The NBA does a fantastic job promoting their athletes, promoting their superstars, and the NHL is working towards that ends, and that's important. And I think that's what the NHL needs to continue to do. And yeah, there's a cheese factor, but we're in Las Vegas. It works. This city is built on cheese.
Yes.
I mean, it only would work that the crazy night, you know, slashing the jet. And slashing the you know the Capitol. What did they even put out there? I couldn't even remember what it was for the beginning of the
no. They you know what I know. Heard? There was a rumor going around that they wanted to burn some flags, and the hockey ops said we're not doing that.
That might be
like
a little
it's okay to have somebody say you know we don't have to go that far.
Yeah. But I'm with you, Elliot. I'm all with you. I think this is I think this makes all the sense in the world.
Okay, so we'll do another quick Ask 31 before the end of this segment from Chris Ostrander. Blackjack advice would be greatly appreciated. Dave, you're up on this trip so far?
Yes.
I'm up. We had a rough night. We had a rough night last night, but we're both still up. What blackjack advice would you give young Chris Ostrander? I assume you're young, Chris. If you're not, I just de-aged you.
Don't split tens. Like some jerk at our table last night.
Yeah. you know, Chris, here's the thing I would tell you that, and I'm being serious about this because we had a guy last night who did off the board moves like he would the dealer would have
the dealer had a five the dealer had a five showing
and this guy and he would have like 13 and he would take a card, or the dealer would have a jack showing and this guy would have 12 and he wouldn't take a card, and a couple of times it busted everyone else at the table, like it cost us a lot. Hey, we understand that I learned how to play once, I didn't know what I was doing. There's always going to be people who don't know what they're doing, but don't kill the rest of the table.
Yeah, that's a very good advice because I had to get up and leave the table.
Yeah, David got up and left the table. And you know Dave, Chris, he's got those pythons for arms. We thought he was going to kill the guy. We thought we were going to have to pull Dave off the guy, but he just got up and left the table.
One last bit of advice, and this was passed on from Eddie Hall, who's been telling me this for the last 2 weeks since we started the Stanley Cup final. Don't bet what you can't afford.
Yes, Chris, that is.
That's code for him telling me you're not getting a pay raise. I don't care how much money you lose.
That's right. Rogers is not bailing Dave out of this situation. So we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about some other league stuff. Thanks, as always, to GMC Canada for sponsoring. Jeff Merrick is off this week. Elliot Friedman, Dave Amber, 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind, with features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold-flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever. The 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade.
Okay, David, where do you want to go around the league? What interests you right now? I know we're caught up in this. Anything stand out?
Yeah, well, I'm very excited, one, for the draft, but two, for the offseason moves. And I think in the last 2 years, what we've seen in the NHL is there's a lot of big players moving. And you didn't see that in the past. We know for a fact John Tavares could be on the move. John Carlson, who's putting together an incredible season. I mean, he is making himself money each and every game. I want to know where these two big names are going to fall. So to me, in the offseason, because I think there'll be dominoes. The one thing about this Vegas team having the early success it's had is it is maybe changing the blueprint a little bit for teams. First of all, they have no superstars.
Yep.
And secondly, they're built on speed.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we're going to start seeing GMs, you know, it's a copycat league, trying to copy this blueprint of, hey, we're going to have a bunch of guys who make $3 to $5 million. We're not going to have 10 and $11 million guys. To me, that makes it interesting. What's going to happen to John Tavares? What's going to happen to John Carlson? And what other dominoes are going to fall? James Van Riemsdyk, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of really interesting names that are going to be on the move this offseason. And a few teams, I think, are going to look at Vegas and say, wow, Marc-Andre Fleury carried them, and I know he struggled in the final, but he certainly was the MVP in the first three rounds. You know, how do I shore up my goaltending? Because without a strong goalie, you just can't get here.
Well, I think that's one of the most interesting storylines. So Lou Lamoriello made news the other day when he made the changes, Gar Snow and Doug White in New York. And I do believe that one of the things that Lou Lamoriello met when he met with John Tavares, he talked about getting a goalie. And I'm really curious to see if that goalie is the one in Washington, Philip Grubauer. Mm-hmm. Now, the other team I think that could be in on Philip Grubauer is Carolina. And there's probably more, but Carolina is the one off the top of my head that I think about. But when I see this back up in Washington, the guy who actually started the playoffs for him, I wonder if that's going to be a Washington move in the offseason to get something for him.
And you mentioned Lou Lamoriello. What's his background? Who's the guy who helped land Freddie Anderson to Toronto, right?
And he obviously drafted Brodeur.
And who was the backup. So he's has
and
his history.
And he traded for Corey Schneider.
There you go. He has a history of sort of saying these guys are going to be A1 guys. They're maybe not in that spotlight right now, but we can see them taking that leap forward. So Grubauer might be a very coveted. That might be the biggest chip Washington has to play this offseason.
Yes, and I do think that is someone they will be able to get a good return for.
Sure.
Lamoriello, I've heard Lamoriello's a big fan of DJ Smith. Now, I don't know if that means he's going to be the head coach, but people keep telling me that DJ Smith has got a legit shot at that Islander job. Now, Tavares, the one thing I wonder about is, does Lamoriello wait to see if Tavares returns before he hires a coach? Like, and the reason I wonder about that, and this is purely me spitballing here, David, is his head coaching choice at all different based on whether or not Tavares stays or not? Like, is he going with a rookie coach if John Tavares stays as an Islander? Or does Lamoriello just say, look, I'm hiring the best guy, and I don't care if Tavares is here or not?
Well, there's some speculation that Tavares and Dougie Waite had a pretty strong relationship, and that Tavares might not have liked the fact that Dougie Waite was summarily let go.
I don't know if I buy that, and here's why. And again, this is not anything against Doug Waite, but I went out to Vancouver last year, late in the year, after the trade deadline, and the Islanders were pretty much out, and Tavares looked defeated. Like, that game, Vancouver came back and they won in overtime, and if you had just seen Tavares around the team, it was after the deadline, and he just looked fed up. He wasn't himself. Like, to me, the thing that stands out the most about John Tavares to me is his competitiveness. Like, the thing I admire about him is that if you go back to his draft year, there were people saying, do I take Hedman first? Do I take Duchesne first?
His skating.
Yes.
His skating wasn't what they thought it should be.
I remember Brad Selwood, who coached him at Oshawa, he said from the blue line in, he's the best player in this draft, bar none. But, you know, what is he going to be elsewhere around the ice? And Tavares knew that, and he was determined to make himself a better skater. I think that the guy wants to win first and foremost, and the team wasn't going anywhere. And that says to me that, look, he probably likes Doug Waite a lot. I don't think he's a guy who would have too much negative to say about too many people. But you want to win.
Let me ask you this, Ellie.
I think it means, Dave.
What's the case for John Tavares to stay in New York? Make the case for me, because this guy wants to win a Stanley Cup.
Yep.
He's going to get paid regardless. Yes, he can only get 7 years elsewhere instead of 8 years, but
unless
we're talking about
a
massive amount of money.
Yep.
He's going to get paid. So if money's off the table, not an issue, why not go somewhere where he has a better, more viable chance to win a Stanley Cup, be a few steps closer? And I understand he likes living where he's living.
Well, I think there's a loyalty factor. I think that's as big of a reason as any. No, Dave, you're right. Like, you're totally right. Here's the one thing now, and this is the one thing that one player told me was going into free agency a year ago, and I think this year has proven him true. Who knows who's going to win in this league anymore?
Yeah, that's fair enough, but I think you could certainly make a case there's 10, 12, 15 teams. Let's put it this way. You have, and this isn't a massive knock on the Islanders, but bottom line is you have the instability of you're doing the Brooklyn thing, you're doing the Long Island thing. You have a new ownership group. You currently don't have a head coach. I mean, you can certainly go to a more stable seeming situation.
Yes, you could.
Right?
I agree with you. I mean, like, the only thing I could say, and I speak from my own self, like, I haven't moved around a lot in my career. I am tremendously loyal to the people who have hired me. And in some cases, I have stayed in those places longer than I could or should have because I felt an incredible loyalty to the places that have hired me in my career. So I get that. Like, I understand how certain people can be wired that way. I do think in a perfect world, if all things were equal, he would want to win as a New York Islander. I think if the Islanders lose him, it is probably going to be because they might have waited too long to make changes. it's clear to me that one of the reasons they did this, they went out and they got Lamorel and they're making the changes they are, is that they realized they weren't going to keep John Tavares under these circumstances.
So show some stability.
Yes, or at least make changes to the things that were going on before. I think if they lose Tavares, it's going to be because the previous ownership of the team didn't take him down a path that he was comfortable.
And I'm not going to try and guess what's in John Tavares' head, because he might think very differently than anyone thinks he's thinking.
Yeah.
But essentially, the point I'm making is, if you just look at the situations and you go around the league, there's some very enticing situations.
Yes, there are.
Whether it's...
There's Tampa. There's Pittsburgh. There's... And I do think, you know, I've kind of written around this. I do think that quietly Pittsburgh is trying to do this.
They might have to move someone. Then. There's a lot of speculation that they're trying to shop Kessel. Right?
And it might be even more than that, but I do think they are trying to see if they can do this. Like, you know, San Jose is definitely very big into this. St. Louis, I think, is big into this. I mean, it's silly. Like, everybody's into it.
He's going to have, you know, 20 teams vying for his services.
Everybody's sitting there waiting to see, are we going to get a spot at the table? I do think that the Islanders are still in this. I do.
Absolutely. They're the incumbent. I mean,
he has to find
something that he thinks is going to be better.
And I think the changes they're making are with him in mind. I think that everything they're doing is about making sure that we're giving us the best, or him themselves, the best possible chance to pick it. Where would you go if you were John?
When you said, what do you want to talk about in the offseason? And I brought up the Tavares name in the beginning, and then I brought up goaltenders. I mean, they need a goalie. That's another issue there. So where would I go if I was John Tavares, all things being equal? Los Angeles would be interesting if they're going to re-sign Drew Doughty long-term.
What about Vegas?
Vegas would be interesting. It doesn't look like James Neal is necessarily coming back. Doesn't look like David Perron, who was a healthy scratch last game, is coming back. They certainly have the money. They certainly have the revenue stream. I mean, my goodness, Bill Foley is, you know, his $500 million investment has probably gone fourfold at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of viable options. I don't know if John Tavares is a Vegas guy. I don't know if he's a Los Angeles guy, but there's certainly...
You can live a quiet life here.
And the guys say that. They don't live... People who think the players are out on the strip every night, they practice.
You're not living in the nightclubs here if you don't want to.
No, we've been scouring them. We haven't found any of the guys out this week.
We've been looking with our TMZ cameras. Uh-oh, player X.
They're out in Summerlin, which is a suburb of here. It's much like Scottsdale, Arizona. I just think there's a lot of different places. You mentioned San Jose. That's very intriguing. Right?
Yep.
They have a nice young nucleus there. They have some veteran players as well, but they certainly look like a team. You know, when you have Burns and Vlasic on the blue line, you have Martin Jones in net, and you now have Couture, Kane, Pavelski, a healthy Joel Thornton hopefully coming back. I mean, there's certainly, you can say, adding Tavares is the one piece we're missing. You could make that case. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of podcast listeners based in Toronto who are sitting there going, what about the Leafs? What about the Leafs? I'm not sure that's the perfect fit, but... You know, he is a Toronto guy, and that would be a very interesting fit. And my goodness, imagine the headlines there, Tavares to Toronto. So there's a lot of different places. Vancouver fans were dying to see if he would be the fit there. I don't think Vancouver, because I think they're too many steps away.
Yeah.
Had they won the draft lottery, maybe that would have been a real enticing situation. You mentioned Tampa. My God, imagine dropping John Tavares onto that team.
And that's a no-tax state.
I don't think he's chasing money. If you look at his last contract.
You do to some degree. Like, I don't like it when people say, like, one of the things I always loved about Ron Francis is Ron Francis, like, 20 years ago, signed a huge free agent deal with Carolina. And I remember I interviewed him about it, and he said, I hate it when people say it's not about the money. It is about the money. I wanted to go to Carolina because I like the idea of playing in Carolina, but it is about the money. So there is money is a factor. And when you're in no tax state, like this is the one thing that guys tell me I don't take into a factor enough is what is your real dollars? Like when you're playing in Montreal, like Hugo, our camera guy, he lives in Montreal. Like Hugo makes $700,000 a year and half of it gets eaten up by the taxes. Taxes are big in Quebec.
But hold on.
Yeah. You go to Tampa and your situation's much better.
But you're not factoring in something that's very, at this point, very relevant.
Yeah.
NHL players earn U.S. dollars. So yes, you pay higher taxes, but at this point you're getting a 30% premium on the amount of money you're making. So that's a big difference. So 10 million US a year is like 12 million Canadian.
But with the taxes in some places where you are taxed heavier than other, it matters.
One other factor.
It's a difference.
One other factor, I think.
And a good agent, and most of these guys are good agents.
They bake all that in.
They make sure the player is well aware of what that means.
One other factor, and it goes back to your loyalty issue. I don't see him signing, you know, with the Philadelphia Flyers or the New York Rangers per se. It's and the reason I said I just think that would be, instead of them chanting Pot Van, they'll be chanting Tavares for the next 30 years if he did that. I mean, you know.
It's funny you say that because I never see that.
I think that could be too close to home.
You know, it's really funny you say that because Philly's got a ton of cap room and the Rangers got a ton of cap room. And I'm sure both of those teams would love to do it. And he's never answered that question, but I've heard people around him try to debate that question.
Well, you could argue the Islanders are closer to a cup right now than the Rangers. You really could, in my opinion.
Yeah, but the Rangers, because of the way they do things, they could be two or three moves away from doing the right, from coming right back. And they still have Lundqvist, who, like, I thought was phenomenal last year, and has been phenomenal. Remember when we were debating, like, is this contract a good idea? Man, he's been fantastic. Because Tavares won't answer these questions, which I get, we have to kind of debate and speculate. Like, would he want to be the guy who goes from the Islanders to the Rangers or Philly? I don't know.
The other team, and not to change the topic here, but just when you brought up Lundqvist, I started thinking about Carey Price. I'm fascinated to see how the Montreal offseason plays out because I just think there's a lot there. Weber missed the last 5 months.
Yep.
Price had, by all accounts, just a horrific season.
Yep.
The Galchenyuk center, wing, trade, keep, debate, it goes on and on. Pacioretty, their captain. I mean, it's filled with traded. So there could be a complete overhaul for Montreal. And, you know, Marc Bergevin is still sort of the puppet master pulling the strings. And what's he going to do? Because he has a lot of questions there.
Well, also, he could be the key to the draft because obviously Buffalo's keeping the pick at one. And most people tend to think that Carolina's keeping the pick at two, although they're a wild card. Like, new owner, not afraid to look at things differently. You know, we don't know what he's going to do. But most people tend to think they're keeping the pick. Now, Burge at number three, he could do just about anything. They're looking for center and D. Like, I thought it was interesting. I saw a quote from Zadina the other day, the prospect, saying that they're probably not taking me because they're looking for centers and D. And I think he's right. I think he's right about that. So if they're interested in the Finnish center, they could take him there or they could trade down. Now, I've had a couple of teams tell me that they think that whole Finnish center thing is a smokescreen and Bergevin wants one of the defensemen. But he could move around. I do think that Berge, in a lot of ways, I just call him Bergevin. I don't know why I call him Berge. I'm not that close. I do think that Bergevin is the key holder to the wildness of what the draft could be, depending on what he decides to do.
Which makes for compelling TV. And that's the franchise I'm just wondering. I think we could start September next year with 7-8 new faces and some of their key guys, including their captain, might not be there, and it could just be very interesting. And what do you do when you have a franchise goalie in Carey Price making more than any goalie in the league who's got, what, another 6-7 years?
No, next year's the first year of the new deal, so it's an 8-year deal.
Wow. You know, if you're rebuilding or, you know, however, whatever terminology you want to use, and you have a franchise goalie, what do you do? I don't think Carey Price wants to sit there for the next 5 years on a bottom five team.
You know what's interesting, Dave, is that I have heard that I wouldn't say the pressure's off, because I don't think the pressure was ever off there. But I have heard that internally, they've been told that it's time to rebuild a bit. And even though they've got a Price there and they've got Weber there, that they've got to stock up on players and prospects and picks. And I wouldn't say it doesn't mean that making the playoffs is not the end of the world next year, because we all know everything is the end of the world in Montreal. But I do think that the ownership there won't freak if they're competitive and they improve but don't make the playoffs.
What do you do with Carey Price, though?
You know, I think the thing is this. Like, the one thing that this league has shown is that you can turn around quick. And if Carey Price gets back to Carey Price, he can carry you somewhere. I think you have to throw the onus on his lap. You know, Carey didn't have a great year this year. And the one thing is that he's been counted out before in his career. How many times have we thought, he's not going to pan out or he's not serious enough, and he shoves it right down our throats? I'm banking on next year being a shove-it-down-your-throat year from Carey Price. And also the other thing, too, is if you're trading him now, David, you're trading him at the lowest value.
Oh, I'm not suggesting trading him. I'm just wondering what his state of mind would be if it's
sort of... I think he's going to be determined to be great.
If he looks in that dressing room and there's no Pacioretty, there's no Galchenyuk, and there's a number of prospects,
there'll still be Weber.
Hopefully healthy, yes.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, the thing is, like, if your prospects are good, we've seen how that can energize a team.
Absolutely. Well, you don't have to look much further than what we're seeing with Washington right now, and the fact that Barry Trotz has made a point of saying it's the youthful speed and enthusiasm. These guys don't know the pressure of the Stanley Cup final. They're just playing their roles. And so there is something to that for sure.
Now, I will also reveal another secret about David Amber in this segment, okay? So nobody goes harder for the Canadian teams than David Amber does. Like, you know, at the end of the night, we'll get the text because we have a group text. Like, you know, like there's a group text with my, I'm on it, David's on it, Nick Kyprios is on it, Brian Spear, who produces Hockey Night in Canada, is on it. I think Kathy Broderick, who's an associate producer and produces Coach's Corner, she's on it. And Dave will, like, if the Canadian teams go 4-for-4, be like, good night, everybody, 4-for-4 Canadian teams. Or if they go like 0-for-6.
Give that
like,
some context.
Yeah. No, no. Well,
I want to stay employed.
I'm going to slander you and then you can fix it. And then if he goes 0-for-6, he'll like take the flags down to half mast. Bad night for Canada. And so since we're here in Vegas, if you had $50 to put down on a Canadian team next year, who are you betting on?
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. Okay.
Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg, Toronto, and Edmonton are the three Canadian teams that are.
You don't like Calgary? I think they're better than they were this year. I really do.
I went hard on Calgary and it blew up in my face. So I'm kind of losing a little bit of faith. It's kind of like, show me now. They need to take some steps in the right direction.
I think Winnipeg's right. I think that's a really particularly bold call, but I think they're a hell of a team.
Yeah. And Toronto, it's interesting what's going to happen this offseason with them. Edmonton had such a bad year. They're going to have a bounce back year. They have the best player in the game in many respects in Connor McDavid. I expect their defense is going to be much improved. Cam Talbot's going to have a better year. So I'm still hot for those teams. But let me just quickly explain, and I know we're probably not a ton of time.
No. I cheer for the Canadian teams
because I cheer for our view. We need eyeballs. We need people watching. We need people listening to these podcasts. The more interest there is in Canada for us, the greater the interest. The greater the interest, you know, the greater our job security.
You know what? I understand self-preservation, believe me. I hope nobody from the NHL Hockey Operations Department or the Anaheim Ducks are listening to this, because 2 years ago in the playoffs when Ryan Kessler interfered with Cam Talbot and Anaheim scored that goal to send that one game into overtime, like I went on air and I said, look, Kessler's got his leg. And Colin Campbell this year goes on Hockey Central and the radio show at noon and he says, yeah, well, you know, this is only an issue because Elliot Friedman's going on and saying Kessler's got Talbot's leg and he wants the Canadian teams to win. And even the Ducks were like saying they want Hockey Night in Canada. They want the Canadian teams to win.
You have a mighty voice, Elliot.
Right. And I'm like, no. I'm pretty objective. And now we got Amber here on the podcast talking about how he's waving the flag down the strip of Las Vegas.
Oh, man. Listen, this has been, I love the storylines here. This final has been phenomenal for that. Two great storylines playing out, whether it's OV getting his cup and Washington finally exercising all those demons, or Las Vegas doing the unthinkable and winning the Stanley Cup. So it couldn't have worked out better for us. The other thing is this. Listen, I am Canadian. It's been 25 yes. years since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. I mean, my goodness. People, we eat, breathe. This is what we do. This is what we're about. And the fact of the matter is, it's been a long time. It'd be great to have a Canadian-based team, give the Canadian fan base, at least in that city, something to celebrate. So bottom line, that's it.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you in that. Like, I'm a pretty objective guy. I root for people. Like, I would like to see Barry Trotz win a Stanley Cup. Guys battled a long way. He was an underdog a lot of the way. You know, we've read about his son. You know, Barry Trotz gave me a book. Well, he worked on Hockey Night in Canada 1 year when his team got knocked out early and he came in for a few games in the playoffs. And I actually brought it with me to Vegas.
Elliot's digging through his
luggage. I'm
going
through my luggage.
There's a lot of dirty clothes in there, Elliot.
No, I sent my laundry in today. That'll be a $10,000 bill, by the way. So he gave us a book called Fearless, and I just pulled it out of my luggage right now. It's written by Eric Blem, and it's about a guy named Adam Brown. And basically the subtitle of the book, Fearless, is The Undaunted Courage and Ultimate Sacrifice of Navy SEAL Team 6 Operator Adam Brown. And, you know, he wrote something nice in the book. He gave it to all of us who worked on the panel with him. And his postscript after he signed it was, enjoy this book of faith and human spirit. So I brought this with me to the Cup Final. And after his media conference on the media day, the day before game one, I brought it up to him and I said, look, I want to reread this book a little bit now with you in mind going into the final. Is there something in the book that you would say that's my favorite chapter? And he said, not his particularly favorite chapter, but he said the message. And he said, faith, like he's a big believer in faith, but he talked about how this guy, Adam Brown, taught him that there are layers to people, that what you see is not always what you get, and you really have to get to know a person to understand what they truly are about. And he said, as a coach, that's really helped him. So I've kind of looked through that. I like people. I got a lot of time for Barry Trotz, and he's a guy I'd like to see win the Cup.
That's an excellent point. And he said something the day of Media Day, the day before the Stanley Cup final started, and he said, hockey doesn't define me. It's part of who I am, but it doesn't define who I am.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really important. In other words, he's taken the pressure off himself. He'd love to win a Stanley Cup as much as anyone else, but it's not going to end his life if he doesn't. And I think when you take that pressure off and you put things into context, and he's able to sort of say, this is a part of who I am, but it not doesn't define me in my entirety, that's a really important thing. And he said the same thing when he kind of turned it on the media people. He said, I'd like to think all of you have your own interests and have your own lives, and you know, that's important. You're not all just about being the talking heads, doing this and doing that. And I think that's really important.
I agree with you. And you know what? I've had people who've been like kind of critical about Trotz about that, saying that in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you should only be talking about the Stanley Cup. It's interesting to see how the way people think. But anyway, as I was saying, I do want Trotz to win the Stanley Cup. But I'm with you, David, in the sense that I generally root for stories as opposed to individual teams or individual people. But I would like to, by the time I retire from Hockey Night in Canada, and if Eddie has his way, that's going to be very soon.
I might be at the end of this podcast.
I would like to see a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup. I would like to cover, I don't care which Canadian team it is.
Yep.
I want to cover a Stanley Cup parade in Canada. It's one of the few things in my career I haven't had a chance to do that I would like to do.
Agreed. I agreed 100%. And it's funny because, you know, 25 years ago, it seemed perennially the Cup was in Canada, whether it was the Oilers, the Flames, the Canadians. And you kind of, I don't want to say took it for granted, but it was just, well, yeah, the Canadian team will win the Cup. It's been 25 years. A whole generation of hockey fans in Canada have never experienced, and I'm not saying Canucks fans are suddenly going to be Flames fans, but it would be neat to have a Canadian city be able to enjoy that moment.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back with some Ask 31s. I'm also going to introduce you briefly to the two other people who are in the room with us. Hugo Regenbald, our cameraman, Eddie Hall, who's responsible for all the things you hate about remote production.
Breakaways and breaking trades. Catch highlights, news, and expert analysis from the best in the business. Sportsnet.ca, the home of hockey.
All right, we're going to do some Ask 31s with David and myself. Just want to say hi to Jeff. Jeff needed the week off this week. All is good, but we just wanted to say hi to him. And
what's up, Jeff?
We appreciate the work. Like, I got to tell you, normally when I write the 31 Thoughts blog and we have to tape the podcast the next day, my brain is fried. So Jeff does a great job of running with it. And thanks, David, for helping me out this week.
Thanks for having me here. We'll see you soon, Jeff.
All right. So I just want to introduce you. Like I said, we're doing this one in our hotel room here in Vegas, just off the Strip. And, you know, a couple guys have really helped David and I out. First of all, there's Hugo Regenbald. He's our camera guy. Hugo, how long have you been working as a cameraman?
Cameraman, I think from 96. But to Sportsnet, it's 11 years.
And it seems like 311 years, right, since you've gotten to Sportsnet?
Totally.
All right. So you've been a cameraman for 22 years. You're from Montreal, right?
Actually, Ottawa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, moved to Montreal for work.
Now, who was your favorite NHL player growing up?
Guy Lafleur.
That was mine, too. Guy Lafleur was mine, too. And were you always a Canadiens fan then?
Totally. Yeah, with my father being a Habs fan, like all the playoffs and everything, sitting in the living room with a little baby Stanley Cup and just focusing. And every time the Habs would score a goal, my mother would like, what's going on? They scored. She wouldn't like totally be out of it.
All right. Well, Hugo does an awesome job. Hugo, thanks very much for helping us out today, bud.
You're welcome.
All right. Now we're going to introduce you to the second guy. And Emil, who edits this podcast and does a great job, is he hates when they say back when I worked at the Score, back when I covered the NBA. But Emil, this is a back when I worked at the Score thing, because that's where Eddie Hall and I met. When did you start at the Score?
April 1997.
Were you a day one guy?
No.
Okay.
I was in the first group of interns that worked at the Score.
Now, were Tim and Sid there with you, or were they after you? Because they were interns. That's how they started, too.
I'm not sure if they were in the first batch of interns. Myself, James Sharman, who everyone knows,
James
was in
done
that
really
group.
Well.
And I also met my wife in that group, Jody Gans.
That's right. Yeah, Jody Gans, absolutely. Now, what is your role now? I've kind of made fun of it, but like,
no,
what do you
pretty much as you've described it.
Yeah. Because people are, I find that people are more interested in the nuts and bolts of our job than sometimes we give them credit for. What do you do?
So I oversee the remote broadcast. So the mobile trucks that drive up to cover the games, the commentators, the production staff, and to a certain degree, the camera operators and audio technicians that come on to kind of put the broadcast together and cover the games. I don't oversee the studio. So both David and Elliot are not under me as has been portrayed on this podcast. But, you know, I certainly enjoy hanging out with you guys and talking hockey all the time because, you know, I'm in the studio listening and watching the games throughout.
Eddie, I was under your umbrella a few years ago before I got the hosting job. And I remember you'd be the Grim Reaper. The phone call would come, second round of the playoffs, and you'd be walking back to the hotel and I'd be like, hey, great work, but we're moving another direction for the conference finals. I'd be like, so I'm done? You're done.
Amber, we got to give the ball to the closer.
Yeah. Let's get to some ask.
No, hold on. I got a couple more questions for you because so you live in Toronto with your family but how often will you go on the road? Like we have half the Leaf games, we've got the Flames, we've got the Oilers, we've got the Canucks. How often will you go out to Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver?
So it's typically one trip a year at the very least. I usually only travel for the bigger events, the All-Star Games, the Outdoor Games, and the Stanley Cup Final, because a lot of what I do, I don't necessarily need to be on site for, to observe. You know, I kind of manage or help to put together the overall planning, budget, and strategy for resources for the game. So being on site, I'm more of a distraction than I am a help.
Now, well, I got one final thing for you. So Eddie's a good athlete. He's a good golfer. He's a good basketball player. And Eddie and I used to play pickup basketball against each other. Eddie was one of the better offensive players. And despite my obvious girth, I'm actually not a bad defensive player. And
he's also a good shooter.
I used to, not anymore. My shooting has just died. But I used to try to guard Eddie. And there were times when I couldn't and I would have to foul him. And I would always give Eddie credit that he would never scream for fouls. He wasn't one of those guys that complains all the time. But I would say, look, that was an obvious foul. Even though there's no blood, I have to call that one on myself.
I'm old school when I play basketball. I always feel, especially in pickup, the defender has to call the foul. Offensive player should never call fouls.
Yeah, I like playing against Eddie because, you know, he wasn't a big baby about when I fouled.
Now let's get to some real good content.
Okay. All right, Eddie, thanks very much.
I want to see video of that, by the way.
You know what? There was a time that I was okay defensive basketball player. That time has passed.
But it's great. And you know what? I'll put a bow on that. Just the crew we have down here for Hockey Night's been sensational. All the crew, and there's a lot of them. There's like 55 people who are putting those broadcasts on night in, night out, from the commentators all the way through to all the production people. We're really lucky to work with such a talented group.
You know, I agree. Like the best thing about the job is the people you work with. Like if you don't like that, the job isn't fun. There's no doubt about that. I'm with you on that, present company excluded. Okay, so let's take a look at some Ask 31s. We've got some good ones. Here's Robin Harper. The Alfie off-the-record debacle in Ottawa, what's your take on off-the-record stuff? Would you have reported it? Now, Robin, we're going to have a more widespread conversation about that. I can't answer that. I wasn't there. I don't know what was said. You know, I will say this. People ask me all the time who are my favorite people to cover. Daniel Alfredson's right at the top of the list. I love covering Daniel Alfredson, and he was always fantastic to deal with. I just wasn't there. So I don't feel comfortable commenting on how it all went down. But let me ask you something.
Yep.
When something is off the record, what does that mean to you? How do you handle things like that?
Well, it's not for public consumption.
You know what? Sometimes off the record, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I've had to say to guys, does that mean off the record I can't use it?
Or I can't identify
record,
you.
I can use it and I can't identify you. Like that sometimes to me is, because that's the follow-up I'll ask. Like, what does off the record mean to the person who's saying it?
Absolutely. It depends on how inflammatory and how controversial and what would happen with that information. But it's often you're told things. You're told, I don't want to be attributed to this, but just so you know, here's what's happening. And that's important. I'm not an insider like you, and I don't have people calling me all the time with information. But I've had plenty of conversations with people, and they say, you know, let's, between you and me,
blank, you know. And what you're going to get when you're at the rinks, you have a lot of those conversations, especially this time of year when you're talking about injuries or personnel movements or just, you know, coaches feel on players, on specific players. They'll say, you know, this guy's, he's been garbage, but you're not going to air with that.
Have you ever accidentally burned anyone or anything you regretted about doing it or anything like that?
No, I've never had. Again, I'm not, you're in such a different world than I am, Elliot, right? I, you know, as a studio host, it's very different than an analyst, and in your case, an insider especially. It's tough. How you navigate, you and Nick, Chris Johnson, how you guys navigate the information you get and are able to disseminate it without burning bridges and without causing problems. And I know there has been. I mean,
there are problems.
But I mean, for the amount of information you're putting out there, for the amount of problems you've had, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you navigate through that. I'm gladly just the guy to tee you up.
it's interesting. Like, the one thing I'll say, Robin, is that when I was young, I read a story about Chris Mortensen. Chris Mortensen, for those of you who don't know, he works for ESPN. Dave, you know him, right? So he's battling cancer right now, but he's a hell of a reporter.
Like, NFL insider, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great reporter. And someone wrote a story about him once where a GM, and the guy wouldn't say who the GM was, he ripped Chris Mortensen on air. He said, "How? You know, I don't know where he got this story. It's totally false. It's BS." And it turned out the story was 100% true. And this other guy went out and he said the source of the story was the guy who was ripping him on the air. And Mortensen just took it and wouldn't say anything about it. Now, I remembered that a lot because I was like, that's a guy who's trustworthy. And I remember, and I've had similar situations to that. I have told people before, like, if they burn me with something, don't intentionally burn me with anything. Like, don't leak something to me that you know is a lie that I'm going to get caught in. It's not like I'm threatening anyone. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy who reports anything just to report it. But I always remembered that story about Chris Mortensen. And the one guy has told me once that I respect confidentiality. And I think that's the most important thing you have to have in the business, is that people can know if they tell you something. I have a saying, like, I've had guys call me up and say, "Who told you that?" And my answer to them always is, "Would you ever want to know that if someone came after me hard, I gave up your name? And that's why I'm not giving up their name." And I do believe, David, the most important thing is that people know that if they tell you something, that name isn't.
Well, that's why you're one of the most trusted voices in hockey. And bottom line is, you won't last long. You'll lose your credibility, you'll lose your trust, and then you lose all of the people who are feeding you information. I mean, it's pretty simple situation, I imagine, for you guys in that regard. You have to be, if your word isn't good, you're not going to get anywhere in this business. And all the industry leaders, whether it's at our network, at other networks, you have to have that bond.
Okay, Robin has another question I thought was really good. How bad is the video game thing? Montreal head scout not now talking about it. Will teams start checking gamer tags like social media to monitor? And this is something that Jeff talked about an NHL player who was a high pick who may not make it because of his addiction to video games. And Jeff has kept the name private. And I don't know who it is because I don't want to know, so I don't accidentally say it. First of all, you have young kids, right?
13 and 11.
Are they video game people?
No, thankfully they're not. Thankfully they're not. What's the big game that's
Fortnite?
Okay, yeah, my son is not that into it. Thankfully, I'm lucky because he's got buddies who are addicted, and it's become a real problem. I've talked to other parents, so it's tough.
My son is 6. He's an iPad guy. We've talked about video games. I will want him to play it because I think his peer group will play it, but my wife is dead set against it. She doesn't want the addiction. But, Robin, I would say this. I was told that at the Combine, there were a lot of Fortnite games going on. Mm. And, like, for example, like, what do we do? A lot of us, we binge watch on Netflix, especially now since we're traveling a lot. You download your Netflix, you go and you talk about stuff and you watch stuff. Video game, it's a big deal now. And I think ever since Jeff put it out there and now teams are realizing that there is at least one player who's been affected by it, I think it's going to become a bigger and bigger story.
Well, what was the crazy story we came out of Boston in the last few weeks? David Price, didn't he miss a start for the Boston Red Sox because of carpal tunnel based on video games he was playing?
Yes.
And it might have been Fortnite.
I remember
for
Joel Zumaia was a pitcher for the Tigers. Yeah. He got it from Guitar Hero. That was hilarious stuff. Okay. I will do one more because I think we're getting a bit long and we got to go to work. Hugo's got to go to practice today. Kevin Kellett, Ask 31, what are the summer plans, boys? What do you got lined up this summer?
I have a fantastic summer plan. So we're officially done July 1st, free agency day, and then I'm heading out to do some golfing at Cabot Links, which is going to be fun for a few days.
My wife and I are going to Iceland for a few days, which I'm really looking forward to. Never been there. And then we're doing a family trip with our kids to Northern California and Hawaii in August. So we got a lot going on.
I'm going to tell you something there, Kevin. David's answer is going to be a lot better than mine. We just bought a new house, so we're in savings mode now. This summer is going to be a quiet one for us. I have one goal this summer, and that is to get into better shape. So I'm going to see when we come back in September, Dave, we're going to wrestle, and I am taking you down.
I have one goal as well, and that is to win at the blackjack tables tonight. So let's both our goals come true.
All right, everybody. Thanks very much. I want to say thank you very much to David. David, thank you for pinch hitting for
Jeff.
Thanks
for having me here. Yeah. Jeff, it was nice of you to let me into the seat for a week.
All right, Hugo, thanks very much. Hugo is sitting on the floor with his camera, and the microphone's into the camera, and he's going to feed the podcast back to Toronto to Emil in the studio. Emil, thanks very much for allowing us to do this remotely. You're always great. And Eddie, thank you very much for monitoring and making sure we didn't say anything too offensive. Okay, so everybody, enjoy Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final, and we'll be back next week, Jeff and I, as we prepare for in the lead-up to the awards and the draft. We've got a couple more of these left to go. Thanks very much for listening, as always.